listeners to the Bylines Network podcasts. I'm Julian Greenberg in Bristol.
And I'm Chris in London.
A lot has happened. We've recently launched a brand new mini-series that's going to continue, hopefully, until the next general election. I really hope there's not a general election in May, because then we're just going to go on like supersonic mode. But we thought that we would discuss the budget of 2024. Now, if you are subscribed to the Byline Scotland podcast, don't worry, we will be discussing things completely different to that, although I am going to be bringing up the interview a couple of times later on, because that interview really was quite good. Subscribe to the Byline Scotland podcast and check out all their episodes. They're marvellous. I thought it would be quite good if we were to discuss the main policies of this spring 2024 budget. I would say there are two big ones that I think caught the headlines, and that is the cut of national insurance by 2 pence and the removal of non-dom status for most people anyway.
And I mean, the national insurance cut is obviously a tax cut for people, and a lot of people have said it's great because typically Tory governments, especially before elections, like cutting income tax. So I think it was Paul Johnson? I think he said that it's good that the Tories are now focusing on national insurance because that affects more people and generally more equally. But actually, looking at the figures and breaking this down after the budget had been released, it really only benefits people in the middle and upper earners. If you are earning sort of less, I think it's sort of less than about 30 grand a year, it doesn't actually impact you and you're worse off anyway. So tax cut, not really tax cut, but
no.
The headline is tax cut, and that's what people want to see.
I mean, is it what people really want? Because keep in mind that the main idea of national insurance is that it goes towards like our main public spending things. So like the NHS, public transport, if you can even call it, we have public transport, that kind of thing. And, you know, the one thing I have seen from everybody is that we want the NHS to thrive, please. So the idea that they're cutting, in theory anyway, the main budget resource of the NHS, I don't really think it's going to go down well with people.
No, and I mean, the main, and actually a big announcement that Jeremy Hunt spoke about in the budget was the Conservatives' intention in the long term to just get rid of national insurance altogether.
But the Tories have also said they wanted to get rid of the licence fee, and look how well that's going for them.
Yeah, and I mean, he did say that that would take about 8 years to get into progress, which would take them through 2 more general elections that they would assume that they would win. So that's optimistic thinking, to say the least. So I guess when you're in the dying throes of an administration and about to lose catastrophically the next election, you can kind of say these things and get away with them because they're never going to happen. And they just sound good.
And also, does he really expect to be there to implement that? Like, I'm fairly certain Jeremy Hunt's one of the many, many people who's resigning or thinking of resigning, because he's
which may also be the alternative, losing his seat.
That's probably why he's not going to be standing, to avoid the embarrassment of being like a cabinet member losing his seat, which I don't think has happened since like the 70s or something.
And I mean, it's the thing is, when you're a chancellor, obviously the reason he came in was because of Liz Truss's mini budget. And he came in and the idea was to calm the markets and calm all the investors and make sure we were okay. Having a chancellor announce they're stepping down isn't a vote of confidence.
No,
so
not
really. Kind of, he either has to resign before the next election as chancellor, and then they have to have somebody temporary in between, or he doesn't resign at all. If his idea is that he wants to keep the financial markets calm. And again, I'm no economist, but that's That's going off of what he said. So who knows? But anyway, you know, like we said, I don't think that proposal of abolishing national insurance altogether is going to happen.
No. And of course, the other main thing that they've announced that caught the headlines of is the abolishment of nom-dom status. And I think you understand the stats much better than I do. So why don't you take this one?
Okay, so for those who don't know what non-doms are, that it's basically short for non-domiciled individuals, meaning people who are not resident in this country or tax re for the purposes of tax. So, for example, this was covered a fair bit a little while ago, but Rishi Sunak's wife was of a non-dom status for a while, and that did change. But that she did not pay tax in this country for a period of time, I believe. Now, Labour have called for the abolition of the non-dom status for a very long time because it's essentially allowing people to live and work in this country but not pay tax here. And any individual who works a normal job and pays their own taxes would, I think, agree that that's not a fair system. And the Conservatives have been very anti getting rid of that because they think that, you know, high net worth individuals having to pay tax in this country would drive them away and lose investment.
I
But
paid
basically,
more tax than Amazon when I was employed in the film industry, and that honestly makes me angry.
and it's wild that people aren't really more angry about this because they should when they look at the numbers. But in this budget, the Conservatives have had sort of an epiphany, and they've decided that they are going to start taxing people who are not domiciled here. So this comes into effect next year, by the way, 2025. So if Labour win the election, it will become policy anyway, but the Tories, I don't think will be enacting it. But they're changing the current system to a residence-based system. So I don't think it's quite as, I'm not saying extreme, it's not as much of a change as the Labour Party were proposing, but it's very similar. And it essentially means that if you become a UK resident from a foreign country, you start paying UK tax on foreign income and gains after you've been resident here for 4 years. So I think Labour's proposal is slightly different, but Labour, if they win the next election, will implement a policy very similar to that anyway. It's just a bit of a strange thing for the Conservatives to suddenly change their mind on, but they've done it. I think it may have been because of the attack lines that a lot of parties took. And they did annoy Rishi Sunak because obviously, you know, like I said before, his wife used to be in and have a non-dom status. So maybe it was just a way of closing that line of attack for them. But it's certainly a random policy to throw in the last budget before a general election, which they're likely to lose.
There have also been like a couple of other policies that have been announced, such as good news if you are having kids, because Mr. Hunt said that rates paid to nurseries to fund childcare hours for parents of children aged more than 9 months will continue for the next 2 years, which, you know, I think we can both agree is generally a good policy.
Well, the only problem with that is if we look into that as well, again, all of these things are great headlines, but there are not enough people who work in nursery to deal with that policy being implemented. There's not enough people who work in childcare to actually enact it. So they're struggling. And you may have noticed this if you watch television with adverts, like with programs like ITV or Channel 4, ch channels with advertising. You may well have seen the adverts for government. From government telling you to do big things and work with small children because they are desperate for childcare workers to help fulfill this idea and this policy. Yeah, it, again, it's nice on paper, but if you dig into it, it's.
Yeah, well, a great example of that is they actually announced a couple of policies for the arts, which surprised everyone because I genuinely thought that the Tories forgot that the arts existed. So the big three ones, according to The Guardian at least, the government will spend 26 million on the National Theatre to upgrade its stages. Independent films with a budget of less than 15 million will receive a new tax credit, and the Treasury will also provide eligible film studios in England with a 40% relief of their gross business rate until 2034. That's great. But I don't know if anyone knows this. The film industry in this country right now is dying. And I'm talking like not dying in that it's lost a leg. I'm talking like it is on the ground, popping up blood, begging to be put out of its misery,
Oh
dying.
God.
Like with the combined hits of Brexit, the pandemic, the cost of living crisis, and the strikes in America, these things are now starting to like, because I don't know if anybody knows this, but quite a lot of the British film industry kind of relies on multinational American productions. You know, think your Marvel films, any big blockbuster that you see that needs a city destroying, quick, go to London. They don't care about London getting destroyed. Yeah. And unfortunately, a lot of those productions have shut down because, you know, they decided that they actually need to pay their writers and actors much better and not use their images and words in AI, which is a good thing. It's going to be a good thing. But that has left like a big vacuum. And on top of that, there are now productions that are shutting down because the energy bills are just too much to cover. It's now getting to a point where I think the main studios that exist now, like Aardman, Heyday Films, the BBC, all those guys, they will survive. But I don't think they're going to be putting out as much as they used to, at least big budget film wise, anyway. But everywhere else, it's going to be a lot more difficult to start up a studio like they did, basically.
So these measures are too little, too late, really, for many
Yeah, like
Brit.
we need like a big sweeping relief package, effectively, and like some kind of rules to protect the British film industry in this country. Because if it doesn't, then our biggest exporter, because let's face it, cars are no longer our biggest exporter thanks to Brexit, our biggest exporter and like the biggest cultural touchstone that this country produces is it's not going to be as like change like life-changing as it used to be anymore. And I think that can be like replicated across like any and all of like all of these things. Like they're good headlines. Like they're really good headlines. Like the windfall tax continues. It's great. We need more though. But I suspect that the reason why they're not doing more is because they don't have the money anymore. Like, as much as I give them grief for this, half the reason why Labour have backed out of like their biggest policies is because they don't know what state the economy is going to be in and how much money they're going to have to splash out when they eventually get there. And while I do kind of sympathize with that, it still really annoys me that they have to that they say, oh no, we're not going to do that anymore, because that's not going to enthuse voters.
But that's a like the country after decades of conservatives want a substantial change in direction and a party that offers them something different. The thing is, the Labour Party have forever been plagued with that. No, you know, there's no money left,
There's no
sorry.
money anymore. Good luck.
You know, and that in a campaign, if they're for Labour, if there was any sort of inconsistency in their spending plans or how they would fund something, even when Jeremy Corbyn had his election manifesto, he literally was like, "It's fully costed from these people. Look at these papers. Look at the sums. They're there. I did it. It's fully costed." Because the Conservatives have put such a spotlight on financial responsibility and, you know, treating the country like it's also, this is the thing that makes me mad. Like the Tories think the country is like a household with a budget and a credit card. Like you can't max
No,
out the credit
not a
card.
household. They think it's a business.
Yes. So like the country, they're like, we can't do this because of X, like Y, Z, and you can't max out the credit card and whatever. But
There's no magic money tree.
no magic money tree. Yeah, all of this stuff. But Countries are not businesses. Countries are not households. The economy is, government spending doesn't work like that. But that narrative, because it resonates with people, especially at the moment, people are literally cutting back on anything they can to try and get through the month because of.
What should I do today? Eat or heat?
Yeah. But like that narrative of financial responsibility, I think, echoes with people, especially at the moment, because of how. Because of the cost of living crisis, but Labour also have to kind of match that, because if they leave the open goal of, well, you're just going to spend all our money and you'll destroy the country again, or which they kind of didn't because it wasn't really all their fault, but that narrative is bought and it's already sold and it's distributed. The only real thing that they could the only real interesting thing is that going into this election, both parties have kind of shaky stances on how they manage the economy. Because Labour from decades ago, which has that narrative has lasted forever. And then, of course, you have Liz Truss's tenure when the economy literally crashed and people nearly lost their pensions. And now people can't pay their mortgages. That's not something that will be forgotten. But it's also not, there wasn't anything in this budget that actually tried to fix that. This was mainly tinkering around the edges. It wasn't something to say, we're going into election year. This is the last budget we're going to have before the general election, by all accounts. We're going to make this huge. We're going to make it like headline grabbing. And there were a few things on there that look good, like we've said before. But when you look below the surface, it's not really there. It's not that great. So.
When I listened to the Byline Scotland podcast, by the way, subscribe to the Byline Scotland podcast, they talked about the budget in a specific way of how will this help A, Scotland, and B, ordinary people. Not just, I mean, obviously they went into it of we need how will this help ordinary people of Scotland, but there was like a lot of crossover with ordinary British people. And they talked to a person from the Trussell Trust. Marvelous interview, by the way. They do great work across the border. Subscribe to the Byline Scotland podcast, by the way. And by and large, she said more or less the same thing that we do. Like it looks great. There were even like a couple of policies that were great, but it's not doing anything to help out ordinary people. She actually pointed out that most of the people who come into the food banks, because that's what the Trussell Trust does, it runs food banks.
Is that during the pandemic, there were lots of different initiatives tried to see what might work to be quick and responsive and target particular groups of people who we were most worried about. And so there were things like the cost of living payments, which come to an end in the next few weeks, which UK government was giving to people on the lowest incomes every 6 months or so for a period of time. Every time one of those payments landed, and the last one landed at just at the end of February, we saw fewer people turning up at food banks needing help with food.
And by the way, the thing that actually made me like almost want to applaud out loud in public while I was listening to the podcast was her going like,
As a network of food banks, we are absolutely clear we shouldn't be here. We should not be needed. It is an absolute disgrace. Shame on us all that we've let it get to a situation where we have hundreds and hundreds of food banks operating right across Scotland and the UK, because our social security system and protection from decent work is not good enough.
There's a saying, and it's quite a well-known saying, that charity is a failure of good government.
Yes. Oh,
And
yeah, that just reminds me of like something the German comedian said. We don't have charity in Germany. We call it paying our taxes.
and that's, I mean, ultimately that's what you expect a government to plan and, to do things that would make everyone's lives better. And like you've said, there are a few things which will have an impact, like fuel duty cut, and that's staying the same. That it was a temporary cut that's been extended again for another year. Reforms to how child benefits paid, that's going to impact so many people. That's not talked about enough either, because that's been being called for ages. But for a majority of people, this doesn't do anything. You check the budget calculator, and a lot of my friends did the same. We were talking about it in group chats. If in case you didn't know, I am a nerd, and we worked out, a lot of us, that based on the national insurance cut, that would give us an extra £6 a month.
Oh, wow. I can buy more cheap cider. Let's go, everybody.
And like that's fine, but it's not. I could do without the £6 if it means it's going to the NHS or other public services. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
Or even if that was going to uprating people's benefits to make sure they could afford to buy food and heat their house. There was nothing bold here.
Which I think leads us into the next section, rather neatly, of does this mean that there's going to be a quote unquote early general election? Because there's been a lot of speculation about whether or not we're going to have a spring general election, along with the mayoral elections and the local elections, or an autumn general election in October or November, or God forbid, December again.
So all we know at the moment is Rishi Sunak has ruled out an election on the 2nd of May. However, there
Yes,
are rumors it
he's a
could.
politician. Take everything he says with a grain of salt.
Yeah, but there could be ru there are rumors that it could be June.
June.
So
Summer.
summertime. But we if this was the if this was the sort of major chance to show that you want to help people and you want to make change and you want to make the country work for people, and you're going into an election based on this budget. It's not the best of things to go into an election having done.
No, like the only thing that really like hinted at that Hunt had an election on the mind was he made like a very weird dig at the Liberal Democrats, didn't he, during his speech. And by the way, everybody, the main opponents to the seat that he has is the Liberal Democrats, so it was probably a coincidence. Yeah, I don't know about you, but I read everything I've read about this budget, like the cuts to public services. Cuts to borrowing, like the plans to launch a new app for the NHS, child benefit, all that kind of stuff. I read all of this stuff and I'm just kind of like, this does not scream there's a general election around the corner.
No, and I mean, on a point of coming at this, because neither of us are obviously conservatives, the fact that the Tories have had 14 years in power and they have ruined this country, that's the statement I will make. Nothing in the budget fixes that.
No.
We are in recession at the moment. There was, I don't think, really any mention of that either. We talked about it earlier, the national insurance cut actually fails to make up for the fact that most people are being dragged to pay into paying tax. They call it fiscal drag, but it's the personal tax allowance has been frozen for a few years now, which means that as salaries increase every year, which they tend to do when you're being paid by a company or a business, or the public sector, you're paying more tax because the allowances on what you're allowed to take home and not be taxed on has stayed the same. So everybody is paying more tax, not because explicitly taxes have been put up, they have, but because they've just allowed that to happen. And like I said, I mentioned earlier, people on lower salaries are actually worse off every month as a result of the measures in this budget. Austerity, like you said, public spending is continued to be cut. Efficiencies in public spending and government departments. Efficiencies from where? Money from where? Cutting money from where? We've had 14 years of austerity and they want to continue it. The public services are on their knees and they're cutting them more. You know, there are 14.4 million people in this country living in poverty. 14.4 million people. And nothing in this budget was for them. Nothing, nothing, nothing at all. And it's just it's a it is a it is a shame and it is a disgrace that this is what they've come up with after 14 years.
Well, we can
I'll get
only
off my.
hope for better things, I hope. sorry, Vaughn, this wasn't meant to be like a bit of a downer. I hope you enjoyed that episode. Do keep following our episodes. There's going to be like a whole bunch more coming out. in the coming months, including a mini series, not only our election fever mini series, but following a journalist as he makes his way to with donations to Ukraine, interviewing a couple of the residents there. I hope that'll be very interesting. That's coming next month. I've been Julian in Bristol.
And I've been Chris in London.
Thank you for listening to the Byelines Network podcast. I do hope you enjoyed it, and I do hope I have also convinced you to subscribe to the Bylines Scotland podcast and their marvellous team over there. This was hosted by Julian Greenbank and Christopher Davis, and edited by Julian Greenbank. We do hope that you'll join us next time.